interrupted. Current neo-uranial, climate changed, behaviorally controlled, energy starved, alien invaded, and nuclear glowing, postulated cricketism to bring you behind the woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting episode BTWRLM 548. Sure looks like an interesting time, as we've been told. As I was starting to report a while back, the wars, the religious wars, the wars against religions and the discrimination, whether or not people feel it in America, it's been pretty prevalent in the last 10 years. You hear it now with the bombing of the Christian hospitals in Gaza, and now this story next coming here. What came to mind on this is Matthew 10:22, and ye shall be hated of all men for my name's sake, but he that endureth to the end shall be saved. But when they persecute you in this city, flee ye into another. For verily I say unto you, ye shall not have gone over the cities of Israel till the Son of Man be come. You look at what's going on in Israel and who's doing it, and this is a very interesting correlation that Jesus was telling us. We read this story again today. It's not just in Jerusalem, but across the world, Christians being attacked. If you are a person who reads the Bible, you realize that that was told by Matthew 22. You're told that these things shall pass, and it's going to be an interesting thing there. I hadn't noticed it before. What you should do is almost like what I told you about the Covey swindle. When you reach the insanity, you have to walk away from it. You just go to another place. Find the highlands. Find the places away. There's not going to be a very much respite. But we see here today in another place, not just Gaza, in this ongoing attack that becomes. And I don't really know why, ultimately. Why one over the other? It says here in this article, no Jesus. Christians are under attack in Australia. Religion is increasingly being associated with bigotry and intolerance, yet proposed law changes discriminate against believers. This is nothing different than what we see in the cancel culture. They scream to high heaven that you're doing something like claim that you're not being inclusive and they're not including you. So this is the insanity that it's coming across the world. We read here the latest such proposals worked out by the Australian Law Reform Commission seek to eliminate the exemptions to the country's discrimination laws, which allows religious schools to expel students, fire teachers, and turn down applicants based on their sexuality, relationship status, and pregnancy. In other words, it allows a religious school to be able to hire and admit people who adhere to its own values. It could be argued that this social engineering legislation that undermines the protection of religious freedom, and if Australia is to maintain a harmonious society, it would benefit from having less such interference. Continue to read this story as you start to put together what's been going on many fronts. The present move by the ruling classes to extend self-identifying victim groups has produced an undesirable confrontation between an existing social groups, each of which tend to deny it has any obligation to the other groups. That's where you get the other, and they get to be discriminated against, apparently. This is not really about celebrating diversity, but separating people along the lines of gender, religion, ethnicity, and so forth. It does so by, treating society as a collection of separate groups that are dependent upon government-managed responses to diversity. I'm pausing right here. Think about that. That's what's going on. You're handing your life over to the government's control. In this sense, the idea of rights has been weaponized, and anti-discrimination laws are increasingly used to stifle expression of personal opinion rather than simply challenge bad behavior. And this is very interesting, even though they're challenging your bad behavior. And this is an interesting problem with how this works. But let's go back to the personal opinion. There will not be one. It'll be the public opinion, or else. And we're seeing that in lots of places with the censorship issue. This mounting intolerance poses a threat to individual freedom and the rule of law. For example, when same-sex marriage activists urge the removal of anti-discrimination exemptions from religious groups committed to a traditional form of marriage, they effectively seek to impose their views and beliefs on those with whom they disagree. And this is the whole process. government displaces your faith and works, which likely are the foundation upon which you live your life, for an antichrist need to control, including making war on the way and the truth and the life, some of the benefits of which the author in the article delineates. And I think it's important to go read that article and start getting for yourself a list of why you should, whatever faith you are, why you need to be existing without the taint, without the oppression. There are many that may deny these benefits that are in this list, but they can't be denied, even when you look at what they try to do, even by so-called non-believers. I've heard atheists fairly open at some point. They believe what they want to believe. They don't want to impose it on anybody. And they want everybody to get along, which wouldn't be much different than what I can see the proper Christian view is, what the proper Muslim view is. Not as we see contorted by those that are making divisions in the world. So we're having a religious war that's come out, and it's the Christians are getting a bit of the brunt of it. We've been hearing that around the world. I've been touching on it a little bit. And you don't think that it's just the war is out there. We heard it come right out of Israel going back there. Israel is fighting World War III, but then they tell you what it's about. It's official, though. World War III has been declared by a world warmonger, and it's a religious war waged by political movement operating under color of the anti-Christian religion. Is my listener following this? I hope so. But to remind you further, against this war that we see here, Israel fighting World War III, and against whom, they tell us, Islam is an Abrahamic monotheistic religion centered on the Quran and the teachings of Muhammad. So who Israel is coming out to say, we declare world war. They say Israel's fighting World War III against radical Islam. Israeli energy minister Israel Katz, the key ally of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, said in an interview published on Monday that Israel's campaign in Gaza is part of World War III against radical Islam. But let's expand that net just a little bit more. The Israeli official, whose parents were Holocaust survivors, called the Hamas raid on October 7 a Nazi attack and described the ongoing hostilities of the Third World War against radical Islam with Russian involvement. So you're watching this thing develop larger and understand Russia is turning a lot more Orthodox Christian as well. While he didn't delve into the alleged connections to Moscow, Katz pointed out that Iran, we're opening the net here to everybody, is the primary adversary of Israel in what he perceives as a global conflict. He described how Tehran employs proxy forces such as with Katz asserted have infiltrated Western nations. The war is also within Europe, in radical communities, he said. Today, this world war is being waged by Iran. And you can look at the EU who did that. Iran had nothing to do with immigrating all that difference of culture in and contaminating itself without check and without balance. But I'd like to have you note that we heard before, the law society there that was looking at Australia, that's really the Bar Association, essentially, and they're sustainable development. They are involved with diversity. They're involved with the unity religion. Remember, I talked all about that in 2015 with the Pope. So this is not too far. When I keep making mention of these correlations relative to Israel, we think it's just a war. And these are correlations that go, it's the globalists still working. And this persecutor does not delve into any evidence for the allegations connections to Iran, which is the target, just as they planned sequentially and occurring, starting with such products detailed by the Project for the New American Century, or PNAC, as you may have heard. There's a whole lot of stuff behind this, and different things that went on. Different groups. PNAC, PNAC, no, not the Pontifical North American College, but you can see in Globalistas it would be there. But no, this is a PNAC, the Project for the New American Century, The Project for the New American Century is a neoconservative think tank based in Washington, D.C. that focused on U.S. United States foreign policy. The thing I keep talking about, we were told they wanted to go right to the Middle East. They were going to take out also Afghanistan and Libya. They started doing that. They went after Syria. Not so good. That's where it started falling apart. Russia steps in. Now, the last person, the last nation on that list was Iran. That's still moving. That's still going forward. So the United States is the player here, and the poodle tool is Israel. And again, we see the attack. It's a religious, Israel saying it's religious. I don't see how it's not. Israel, Gaza, they bomb the Christian hospital over there. The claims that Israel made were not credible as the analysis was made to explain to the world how they didn't bomb that Christian hospital. Video and audio analysis suggests that the missile from Israel and not Palestinian rocket hit the Al-Ali facility, the Baptist Christian hospital there. And quite a few other ones went up. In fact, there's another one they're now questioning. In Egypt, it was another hospital accidentally got bombed. So this is a pretty interesting problem for the world to watch and witness and not really respond to, or witness and respond so half-heartedly. It's really pathetic. In some regard, that's not the Christian way, if you will. To say that there's a way that's not so tainted as I've heard described over the last decades. Expert analysis of the video and audio footage have found major inconsistencies with Israel's claim that Palestinian militants were responsible for the deadly bombing of the Al-Ali hospital in Gaza this week. These Israelis, these Zionists, just incorrigible. They're going to find every reason to not be doing what, try to cause doubt as to what they're actually been doing. What they're planning is also interesting. And I don't know where this goes, but it's interesting to hear what might be being discussed, whether it's real or not. Reports on flooding Hamas tunnels with nerve gas or water are bogus, as we hit this first before the actual claim. Someone, Kedmi, the gentleman that I refer to periodically, has said that the suggestion that they were going to flood the tunnels in Gaza to get Hamas out, likely not going to happen, even though it was suggested. And there was a reason for it. Kind of interesting. I didn't realize it so much. But now we know that place is under sea level. There have been suggestions to flood Hamas tunnels with water or nerve gas prior to IDF's ground operation. However, Yaakov Kedmi, a military expert and former head of Nativ, Israel's Jewish diaspora liaison, considers the idea of using nerve gas highly unlikely. I found that interjection there, the tag, very interesting. He doesn't say water, even though he says it inside the context of his discussion. But the title doesn't say that he was necessarily completely dismissing the water. That was a very interesting, pretty heinous way to go about it, but pretty interesting nonetheless. So where did this suggestion come from? Making Gaza a lake, you can read the story, and you get the link or find it yourself. The former IDF commander, turning Gaza into a lake with a sea channel might be a lesson for Hamas. Let me underwrite this a bit. We don't know what would be in any tunnels, and it could very well be, again, women and children and elderly trying to escape the bombing. Apparently these tunnels can be very deep, deeper than maybe some of our bunker buster bombs could reach. And so there's a little bit of trouble trying to get after them, but there's nothing saying that Israel wouldn't flood those people out anyway. I just find it interesting tactic. Again, heinous is all heck, but there we go. Because some of the tunnels underneath Gaza City are dozens of meters deep, Israel may not have to specialize, have the specialized weapons to destroy them, making flooding the city a potentially cheaper option, as former Israeli commander told Sputnik. With parts of the city potentially below sea level, a channel from the sea could turn Gaza into a lake. Just think about this, folks. When people go to this level, they're invaders of another land, and they're trying to flood out the people that live there after they shove them into a little bitty box, put walls around it, and then dismiss that they had a claim in the land. Again, that should have told everybody there wasn't going to be a two-state solution. Now we're seeing the truth. They want them gone. Retired IDF Lieutenant Colonel Dr. Mordecai Kedar who served 25 years in the IDF military intelligence, specializing in Arab political discourse, and is a lecturer at the Bar-Ilan University in Tel Aviv, told Sputnik on Wednesday that it would, quote, definitely be cheaper to dig a tunnel a few hundred meters, which will stream the water from the sea, than to expend the amount of ordnance it would require to destroy Hamas' tunnel network in the city. If this data is right and the city is actually below the sea level, all you have to do is dig a little tunnel from the sea to a lower place in the city and let physics do its job. When asked about the potential of ecological disaster over all consequences of the urban infrastructure, and we're talking about the civilians there, as a result of the idea of flooding, Keter replied that whoever started this war with us should have calculated it before. And I think it's pretty diabolically cynical to have him say that. The Zionistas started this war with the help of the rest of the major powers in the world. Kedmi says, don't bother, they'll suffocate without air. Kedar wants to make sure, it seems to me. It's still, again, diabolical, despicable. What they will do, and they claim it's going to be after Hamas. And I don't know, but I remember stories of World War II where everybody went into the shelters and bunkers. So people naturally, when the bombing started, goes underground. And you pray. Because you don't know. These people want to do the Palestinians in. For good. And getting back to last week, if you remember, we talked about the UN Security Council having a meeting and not really doing anything at all. Just useless. Despite the uselessness, I observed something coming along that China says. China promises to help Gaza Palestinians. Beijing said it will send humanitarian aid to the region as the violent escalation between Israel and Hamas continues, respecting international humanitarian law and making efforts to ensure the safety of the civilian population. Okay, fine. I just say promises, promises. Wouldn't you? They're still haven't showed up. They have ships, military ships, in the Mediterranean, which are getting a bunch of lip for being there, but they're not there for that reason. I guess they could be at some point, but they're far away from home. If China was serious, though, with its ability to build islands, we hear this in the Pacific, seemingly overnight, you'd think it would send ships and machines and technicians and engineers to the Palestinian coast and at Gaza, right there in their strip of land, where they should have access to the ocean, the sea there, and build them a port or two. That's a pretty, only 25 miles long, but it's pretty long supply. There's at least a north and a south. It's long, that long. They could build that real lickety split and bring their chair, do it in hospital ships, build infrastructure, and just start building, giving the Palestinians their land and access to the sea, which Israel will likely not like at all, but that's going to show another thing. So they promise this stuff, and they have the capacity, but they don't really do anything. And this is the thing, I just, again, promises, promises. Virtue signaling, nation-level virtue signaling, under the color of, quote, respecting international humanitarian law, and making efforts to ensure the safety of the civilian population. Not much insurance going on at this point. In addition, if you look here, the peaceful and just solution, if you look at all this and what they're saying, what I would offer, the peaceful and just solution requires the Jews and the Zionistas move to whatever is left of Gaza, abolishment of the Balfour Declaration approved by the League of Nations in 1922, Palestinians re-inhabiting Palestine as the borders would have in the pre-1947 borders that were accepted, and then the creation of an independent and sovereign state of Palestine with immediate integration of all Jewish people who can make a successful lawful proof of claim for the land that is theirs in a court of law on a case-by-case basis. Because there's some things that happened after 1922. Some people, literally Jewish people, bought land, so that may be valid, but not this other usurpation. Immediate integration of those people would have to be allowed for in the courts, or as Palestinian government immigration laws would then come into bear, which would provide, in the absence of a landed claim, the naturalization which we have in other countries. In other words, you turn Palestine back to Palestine, you give the people back their land, and you allow the people that bought land since 1922 the right to have their land, and the ones that want to live there because it's such a great place to live, they can do immigration. So it's all peaceful like it's supposed to be. Additionally, here that we work this through, Israel compensate the Palestinians who were exiled or killed in all these years. So the historic rationale for this is already in the, if we look back in the history, Germany has compensated all Jews, therefore Israel must compensate all Palestinians since the illicit creation of the Jewish state under color of the fraud of international authority, all the other parts of the world that they did this by, because Israel did the same as Germany did to the Jews from 1937 to 1935. The Zionista regime confiscated houses and lands and exiled and killed Palestinians from the very founding of the Jewish state, so-called, and all the way until now, you're watching. And yet there's never been an actual land claim made. It's like more of a conquest with the help of the world. As I said, there's nobody with clean hands here, it seems, except maybe the Palestinians, which had their land overthrown. As the world watched. This is the whole heinous part about this. Where do we expect to find an example of what's supposed to be done when nobody would do it? But this is like just an abandonment of the United States would be the abandonment of your own law. So it's not going to do anything. Well, then what will? Where do you live? What are you submitting to? What are you complying with in all your resistance, so-called? An intention to a peaceful and just solution would also not include Biden in his written speech using the phrase the arsenal of democracy, which I was referring to not so well last week. I forgot what this was. The arsenal of democracy, bring up a term coined by President Franklin Delano Roosevelt during one of his fireside chat radio broadcasts, quote, who called on the American people to contribute to the war effort and call to arm and support the Allied powers. And this is where you start to focus on what's really going on the propaganda side of all of this. How stupid is that phrase, the arsenal of democracy? We're talking about democracy, right? It means a military occupation, just as you have right now in the United States. I talk about this all the time. Biden is preparing Americans to accept an unjust war that appears to be a making of the Zionists in the administration, such as Blinken, Nuland, and Yellen, and others. They're all over in the federal government right now. Yellen infers the entire economy, which includes the Fed. As I start trying to bring all this stuff together, it looks like it's all over the place, but it's actually tied together pretty well. The actual players of the what's making the decisions are a small core of people in certain aspects of our lives. To show you about this Fed, an interesting article came up, and I've pointed out his website before, the Peter St. Onge, PhD, on YouTube. He does little 3-minute economics reports for us to understand better. And he wrote one, the Fed stole our future. This is a video you can listen, and he goes through pretty quickly. And you can listen for him speaking about what the actual gold age was and how it worked, and that it did work, and it worked very well. And he talks about maybe its contribution and returning there, as I've been saying, go back to gold and silver. This will be a decision that the people of the United States have to start making on their own. He talks about the fiat currency being an experiment and that we've all been the guinea pigs. And he mentions a law, 1879, the return of the gold standard then. And I'm thinking, without going to read it, I have an idea, maybe some of you are interested, to help out, lead the way here. Find that 1879 legislation, review it for all the proper adjustments that might need to be made today, and offer that to representatives, and have it reenacted. Make a gold and silver great again, if you will, and see how this works with the Peter St. Onge, PhD, his account. Pretty cool. I get a little quick to pick it all up, but at least it gives some perspective. And he does a historic thing as well, where you can see in context what the economies do and how the people of the United States, the people in all the world, are going to have to really make some very important decisions for themselves to cut themselves loose from the new ordered world that's coming. And China's leading the way. It's leading the way to it. It's not it's already been set up and it's waiting for everybody, this thing, this financial system. It's global. It's never gone away. It was set up a long time ago. All these players just work toward it. And we've heard that all wars are bankers' wars. Well, who else is really the underpinning of a lot of this? I'd save a lot of time to go there and figure out how to way to undermine it. And I don't mean that we have to undermine it in a, well, we're going to go revolt. We just, this type of a fight is one that you stop consuming. You just stop participating. You hear that? You go on your own, right? And you watch for the fact that they'll try and black market you, but you figure out a way to get around that. That's why gold is very important, particularly in the United States with the 1866 load law. It gives the miner the, that's his work, that's his labor. In fact, it's all about the work. Maybe taxing and controlling his work. That's why miners, when the gold got controlled, they couldn't control that gold. So you start looking at this real carefully, you see a different establishment that still sits there for people to pick up on and use as a guidance, because we really don't have any much more than deception going on. And as I said, these wars, all these wars are about economy, not democracy. That's why the nonsense between the arsenal of democracy. It's war, it becomes economics. But we see here, good for American jobs, U.S. reportedly changes tactics on Ukraine aid. And so we're watching the side slip out from Ukraine to get over to Israel. And all, again, all these, all the players, they're all into play for a reason. It's not like, oh, we're just sliding Ukraine because that's, we never had anything in the future. No, they used Ukraine, they're using Ukraine in order to do the thing that they're moving to. The Joe Biden administration is privately speaking to each representative of both political parties, the Uniparty, in the Congress to justify the need to further aid the Ukraine, in fact, that it will allegedly become the key of economic growth in the United States itself. Well, how is it going to do that? Think about it, folks. Yeah, we're going to get to it here. The White House aides, maybe you can come with the answer before I get to the reading. The White House aides are quietly distributing talking points among the lawmakers to make the case that shoring up the Kiev regime, quote, is good for American jobs, the outlaw reported. And I want to point out here in this paragraph, they're quietly distributing talking points among lawmakers. They may have a lot more political power, but that's what people need to do as well. They need to make talking points on a subject matter that they want to get forward, and they've got to make it simple for these people, these Congress critters, to understand and get it, understand how they assimilate this information so that your issue may be able to be brought into context and then fulfilled into law. They are the first and start of all this. But what is it? How are they going to get good American jobs? While the Fed wants to cut out all the jobs, they're looking for particular good American jobs. And they go on to quote, and what they're passing around as lobbyists now, the executive is lobbying the legislative. Quote, as we replenish our stocks of weapons, we are partnering with the U.S. defense industry to increase our capacity to meet the needs of the U.S. and our allies, both now and in the future. Quote, close quote, a copy of the talking points obtained by the outlet reads. And as I've been saying, they're going to take us to war. They need that war for the so-called economy they need to improve. It can't, but that's going to be what they sell to people. And you just look at the history of World War II, how they got a whole nation to become the biggest material manufacturing nation that they got Americans to do. That's how innovative and work hard we are when we get motivated. They're trying to get it to go again. And we're just beating war drums here. But can't you replenish, look at that, we want to replenish these, the whole reason for more money is to replenish our war reserves. Can't you replenish those reserves like the near empty strategic oil reserve without war? So there's an interesting slip here, and I don't quite know why, but no, they apparently can't. I guess you just can't replenish to the levels that you need when there's no place for it to go. And how do you merely replenish when it's an undeclared war? It's almost like we're not in a war anyway, and they're still doing it. So there's nothing making really sense here on that reasoning, but it's a talking point. And it's just to give enough to pass out to legislatures to convince them that they can support that answer to get more money. And you know the Uniparty is not saying no here on this. So what about what other undue influence on these Congress critters is out there is needs to be paid attention to. I guess part of this was we the people can possibly press real hard. You need lots and lots and lots of numbers to do this, but you can still do it. But then you have the insiders. They're running the government right now. Biden's $106 billion war chest will pass because no one is going to vote against aid to Israel. It is one of the other undue influences. We haven't already seen it coming through here. Congress will almost certainly pass President Biden's massive $106 billion supplemental funding request, bundling new assistance to Tel Aviv together with other security spending because, quote, no one is going to vote against aid to Israel, Rasmussen told Sputnik. I mean, he's truthful that we're giving basically aged and stockpiled equipment away primarily to Ukraine, and we're replenishing our own stockpiles. So in a way, yeah, I guess you could say that's increasing our security from the perspective of making a lot of money from weapons manufacturers, the military-industrial complex, and other people in between, Rasmussen said. But the money laundering is going strong. The laundering machine is running full blast. But as far as the actual benefits to the country, good investment, I'm sorry. I understand with that. I disagree with that. Personally, I think they're living in a different world, the Observer added. Rasmussen stressed that the spending does not help the average American and will actually harm the country's security overall because it will ramp up tensions with Russia, potentially escalate the Palestinian-Israeli crisis into a regional conflict, and further increase the risk of war with China. Again, war. He's planting the seed to invoke a patriotic response to go to war like FDR did. And I just wanted to point out, I just found out in through a reporting, the new House Speaker, the largest political donor relative to who gave to him, back in 21-22, I think it was, AIPAC, A-I-P-A-C. It's the American Israel Public Affairs Committee. Israel Public Affairs, buying your representatives. If it wasn't there before, you're hearing the sellout now of the whole nation. And there's a bigger plan behind all that in Israel as well. I've been repeatedly and routinely noted all this behind the woodshed. But I also thought, if we look at this, well, you see that there's just no law. You want to corrupt the rule of law? Yeah, it's been corrupted a long time ago. I also thought money laundering, especially by officials under color of authority, was illegal, wasn't it? Yeah. Don't laugh. Because the warmonger party that we're looking at, the Uniparty, is planning to kill your sons and daughters, right? I've been telling you this for a long time. It's come to pass. It's coming on. They're now deploying troops in places. You now see where all those bases they left around are now becoming strategic spots for anti-aircraft material to sit and go there. And that's where your sons and daughters will be. And they're going to be in small contingents. A couple thousand guys, gals, may not be enough to stop a couple million coming over the desert. But that's what they're setting up as we see the news. Your sons and daughters are going to be the fodder for the military-industrial complex. They get the profits, and you pay for it on top of suffering all these such things as economic hardships due to the fiat currency, to inflation, to job losses. If you're not working in the military-industrial complex or in industry, you're going to probably be without a job. You'll be in some food bank line, if there's food. So whatever else that they're planning will be on you. Again, this is a multifaceted attack all the time, it seems, from my perspective. They're planning to throw all this at a complacent, compliant people. And that was really, Comey Swindle told me a lot. I was really disappointed because as people everywhere, they just showed how compliant they would be. The response of the non-compliant, if you will, was not adequate, could not be adequate. And it certainly, most of it was not anything I was suggesting would be adequate. And so I'm real concerned about our future relative to even holding this back a bit. Or diverting, actually just diverting. You don't have to stop the elephant. You just get it to go somewhere else. Might have been a donkey too here. I don't know. But apparently, as I look at all this, it's not worthy of the republic that the people were required to keep. When do people rise up against the usurpations, plundering warmongers, threatening national security? Is the license, and until the time you are at risk, might even say is an existential threat to the cancer within. They're going to use your quiet. They're going to use whatever they can to metastasize their control and strangle off anything that you thought was real. It's going to be turned into the fiction, and people will laugh at you for thinking that that was possible. It says, we go into the article here a little bit more. We've blocked and used our veto power in the UN to block every attempt at a ceasefire resolution. It doesn't matter who it's coming from. I think the latest one was from Brazil. They are apparently leaked State Department messages that went out to embassy staff not to mention the word ceasefire, not to use negotiation, basically giving guidance essentially that it's a green light for Israel to do whatever they wanted. And so there's a war, and it's being developed, and it's being, any opposition is being shut down. The language is being done. You notice again, like Ukraine and Russia entered into a peace agreement, and the United States wouldn't have it. So we didn't see it there. And since then, hundreds of billions of dollars and lots of lives have been spent, in not making peace, trying not to say ceasefire. And you see that they don't want it. I mean, it's just the part of the plan. These are the warmongering party, these psychopaths. They intend to take us to war, whoever that ends up being. They intend to use that with all of its psychological power, being at war, being under the thing. I've explained all this for years here repeatedly behind the woodshed. What I've also explained is that we've been in an ongoing domestic war, which few are willing to recognize that reflects out in the world. Not only does the out over there reflect back, but we reflect out. Again, examples. That's the actual license. This war that we've been under that we haven't addressed with the people of the United States is the license that they use against the people as they merely complain about their imprisonment. If we look around, we just complain that we're having a problem, or occupied America being an unrecognized, the most open-air prison. At least Hamas tried something here. If we give ourselves over to say we are an open-air prison, as I've been suggesting, and Hamas was the example for us, if we were just to look and see. Your son, again, the theme is going on here. When I see the troops going over Middle East and all those places that were, the United States is not supposed to be, all their bases, there's no other thing I can see to say, but your sons and daughters are going to die for some foreigners living in a different world. You see all these statements coming out of these articles, as Rasmussen described it there. What will be more valuable to die for than the way of life that has been stolen by usurpers occupying government that are lying in a different world from yours and taking you down by their belief? Again, we can look over, it's a religious war. Well, the climate change is a green religion. This is a religious war against everybody else. And the Pope is up with that, the so-called Christian Catholicism. They're up with all that. It's all a ruse for the future that they want. It's not your future. It's not what you believe. It's not a foundation from which you might decide to live. It's being stifled, and it's being made war against. They'll kill you over it. And so I'm just wondering, maybe it's time for the American people to open a fourth or fifth front the psychopaths didn't expect. Maybe open that domestic war front when the people finally rise up against this existential threat to alter and abolish the miscreant government acting in the color of authority. When are we going to do that? We have the license. It's in black and white. When are we going to start suggesting, unless things start shaping up, we're organized enough to pull this off? I would like to see us getting a lot more organized, not out of just talking about it, but truly coming together to understand this literal existential threat against us as a nation of people, what we want to do, where we want to go, how we want to live our lives. And we're watching what happens to a territory when someone else wants your land. You do not matter. You know, I look around, people always say, no, but the government doesn't care about you. I say, and they don't. So maybe you might want to consider what you're watching in Israel against the Palestinians and say, well, Israel is saying the same thing. And those people, the Palestinians, are getting taken out. And right from my lips to the news cycle, voters in key states disgusted by endless warmongering as the U.S. faces this domestic crisis. Okay, so it's coming to it's not coming to the public or general public awareness, and they're not having it. Well, at least they're not having it as a vote. Voters in key states disgusted. Okay, great. Voters in Georgia, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Arizona were described as having deliberately turned their television screens on mute while the 80-year-old Democrat POTUS, President of the United States, made the case for the splurging taxpayers' hard-earned cash on aid abroad. In fact, some 20 million people took the time to watch President Biden's primetime address on Thursday, a major television network, according to Nielsen, said. 20 million is not very much. When questioned about the Biden speech given against the backdrop of speakerless House, a narrowly dodged and still looming government shutdown, and economic woes plaguing the country, wondered why the commander-in-chief wasn't, quote, talking about the homeless problem or gang violence or trying to solve the opioid crisis. Quote, stupid and unsustainable commitments, close quote, that no longer serve its interests need to be abandoned by Washington, said Doug Bando, a senior fellow at the Cato Institute, a former special assistant to the U.S. President Ronald Reagan, allowing it to serve its own people. He added that young Americans' lives should not be sacrificed to pay for the war party's misdeeds. And that's the least of it. And this is also a political statement, but let's go with the truth of it. I'm glad to hear people are disgusted, but what are we going to do about it? Do you think your vote is going to change all this? So it's appearing here that any peace movement or discussion of altering or abolishing the warmongering party usurping government may find sympathy now, if not active support. So we might want to consider that. And I don't mean that what we see is the FBI setting up for everybody, getting everybody in trouble. I mean looking very carefully at what this is and how to execute it properly. It's a very sensitive subject matter. Otherwise, if we don't do something like this, we'd expect to be buried in by the piles of it, as Michael Malouk described it, and as he can be further read to say how these things are explained. He goes these tabs today use references from Michael Malouk. He seems to be a pretty straight up guy. It seems to be pretty straightforward on how he describes what's going on. And so that's why I'm bringing it up and talking through some of this. The situation. This is, we're in a dire strait at some point. And these psychopaths are sitting in there doing great damage to us. And it seems like it's over there or away. Well, it is in Washington, but for those of you living over there, it's right near you. It's not going away either. And so we have the good jobs that war brings, they want to talk about the military industrial complex. We say the voters aren't liking it. They want to see the domestic stuff happening. The domestic crises isn't. Apparently is not their government being taken over. That should be the number one crisis over all of it. Maybe that's causing all the others, too, if we look at it. But what about the bad jobs done by Americans in the economy? Too wrong to ignore CIA outsourcing assassinations to Kiev ruffled U.S. journals' feathers. So we have the CIA, the money being spent for these groups to go out and go and kill journalists. It's pretty interesting and problematic, certainly. A recent report of the Washington Post revealed how Ukrainian intelligence officers were carrying out espionage activities, including targeted assassinations inside Russia, with the training and support of the U.S. intelligence agency. The article in particular noted how Ukrainian SBU intelligence agencies was responsible for the assassination of Russian journalist Daria Dugina with a car bomb in Moscow on August 20, 2022. An unnamed CIA officer quoted in the article compared the SBU to Israel's Mossad, which has become infamous for its assassinations around the globe, noting it carries broader risks beyond the threat it poses to Russia. The article notes that the ground-up reconstruction of the SBU began after the U.S.-backed coup in Kiev in 2014. You heard all this stuff. Also, the context we talked behind the woodshed. Columnist's former CIA officer and torture whistleblower John Kiriakou explains, now why in the world would CIA do something like this? It has nothing to gain from doing something like this, and I think That's why it was reported. Remember, the Post, Washington Post is, for all intents and purposes, the official newspaper of the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, Bezos involved in all this, too. He goes and talks about that in the article. Why, then, would the CIA report this as an exclusive? I think that they would report it as an exclusive because it's wrong, wrong, wrong. And even with the Washington Post biased view, it's too wrong to ignore. WaPo versus WikiLeaks. He noted that there was really no difference between what the Washington Post had reported and what Julian Assange reported to the head of WikiLeaks. Julian Assange exposed more crimes committed by the U.S. military in Iraq, including the ones now known as the collateral murder video, where an American helicopter gunship is murdering Reuters journalists and then shooting at the ambulance crews coming to their rescue. And he's charged with more than a dozen counts of espionage, but we're supposed to look the other way when the Ukrainians do it. Quote, the CIA's plan to murder Julian Assange in broad daylight in the center of Knightsbridge, London, made its way all the way to the White House and the National Security Advisor before he finally said, this plan is so insane and so illegal, we just can't take the risk of doing it, he said. It's patently illegal. It's a crime against humanity, just as it is to murder a woman who's just going about her normal business in a day. You can't do it. And I think that's why the Post reported it. Now, I'm not so sure about that, but we're hearing what's going on behind the scenes. This is a bad job being done and being supported by governments, endless administrations after administration. We have another time bomb here. A U.S. Treasury deficit double as Biden bankrolls multiple foreign conflicts. So we pay for the agencies to do the bad job. There's no law enforcement whatsoever to keep them straight. It's long since lost if it had been there. And again, we get back to there's got to be someone footing the bill. Well, the people of the United States are starting to say we don't want to foot that bill. These folks don't care. And that should be a real concern for people in looking at how it's going on. It's really not their money. I don't want to get into that side of it. But people think it is. And that's kind of where you have to go first is what they think it is and then show them over time how maybe it's a little different. U.S. Treasury deficits double as Biden bankrolls multiple foreign conflicts. Again, this is a plan to do more war. Say the U.S. is going to further into the red with its client states for serious conflicts. Sergio Rossi, professor of microeconomics and monetary economics at the University of Freiburg, Switzerland, said the strategies to avoid a default would only prove to be a time bomb. U.S. President Joe Biden's appeal for cash to arm Ukraine and Israel could meet resistance from Congress thanks to the runaway federal budget, which we can laugh at because the gentleman that just got put in the speaker, his first bill he put forward was more money to Israel. As we're shifting, Ukraine has done its job, and now we're shifting over into the Middle East, as the neocons apparently want Iran. So there's two things I've been saying that they're going to routinely and repeatedly. They're going to go to war. Your sons and daughters are fodder. And two, the sanctions are a declaration of war. And that relative to Russia, for all the celebritwits saying over and over Ukraine is a proxy war, it's not. Okay, I've been saying this, that I've been telling you what this is about. And I've talked about the sanctions. Weekend one, I was right out with that. Ukraine is a theater to cover up the money laundering and weapons transfers with the sanctions. The United States has started the economic war. The United States used that to start the sanctions, and which that war, that economic, using the economics, is at war. It lost that war immediately. And I identified that for you if you hadn't seen it yourself. In international law, that was the worst thing they could have done, and they weren't positioned, and I told you Russia and China have been preparing for it, and so you watch them prevail, and they're still working it out, they're still going, and the United States is suffering. So if people ignore me, getting into this next article, if people want to ignore me, what I've been saying, in my little view, and how this stuff works in the world, then maybe they'll listen to someone else here in this article that I'm going to be talking about, who is saying pretty much the same things, but he's doing it a year later. And yet another escalation of this global war which the United States is fostering and encouraging, and nations have had enough. The article here, U.S. neocons slow-walking America into war. If not enough that I've been saying it, there's more people coming to identify the nuts and bolts of how it's all working together, and they're doing that amid this Palestinian-Israel conflict. Well, the conflict's been there. Now it's been escalated, and there's a little bit of debate on whether you want to blame Hamas, which is part of Israel, the Mossad creation, and all that, or not. The point is, it's happening, and now we've got men and material out moving. We got women going into war and preparing for war. Slow walking us into war. There are currently some very implicit calls for U.S. military involvement in the region. Executive Director of the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity, Daniel McAdams, told Sputnik, adding that, quote, this is how they slow walk us into war. And so, again, I watched it for years, and he's going to now tell you, if we didn't hear it behind the woodshed, he's going to tell you what he thinks and what he says. Like I said, it comes out pretty much the same. Anybody looking at this and having even some rudimentary information can start to put it together. And the people that are running the country, United States, and Israel and all this, they're a different creature, definitely a different creature. Quote, he says here, quote, yeah, it's a little bit ironic because as he was accepting the gavel, this gentleman, new speaker, the first thing he says is that we've got to get help rein in federal spending and bring down inflation. And almost his next sentence was, the first bill I'm going to bring to the floor will be a support for Israel. So it just shows the disconnect in Washington. The bill starts out saying Israel has a right to defend itself, but when you get down to the meat of the bill, it talks about sanctions on Iran. And sanctions are an act of war, McAdams said. So that's completely concurrent with what I was telling you, and it's not a proxy. They came straight out, the United States came straight out and attacked Russia and lost. Right at the first salvo, took them out. Not Russia, the United States. So understand, the condemning of the people who live there in favor of an invader, the Palestinians are being dismissed in favor of an invader. And I want you folks on the U.S. border, look around. Do you see any difference, actually, in not the size of the countries, what's going on and what the invasion does? Now we hear these bloodlusting psychopaths and rabid Congress critters are about to sanction Iran all over its natural resource, oil. It sounds like a same plan that didn't work. These people aren't smart enough to figure that out. Just like that failed plan against Russia. I don't even need to see more about what's going on. Sanctions, and you see Iran already gearing up against to cushion this potential. They knew it was coming. So if we didn't see it, Iran already knew about it. Just like they saw an evidence to Russia and China and why the global South got kicked up and why they're all coming together with BRICS. And I think that's a different plan. Again, the globalization thing that people aren't quite seeing, but neither here nor there on that. The United States is going to try sanctions on Iran, like it failed on Russia. What all that's going to do, it's going to galvanize the world, politicizing the dollar. It just made the resistance greater. And it seems like everything they do is the wrong thing. And it's a wrong thing in the beginning, but look very carefully where they may want it to go. It may not be such a wrong thing in their eyes. For just and peaceful people, it's a total disgrace, or worse. It's evil, ultimately, but the resistance, in this case, when you go to global and politicizing the dollar, isn't just an Arab axis of resistance. It becomes an international resistance. The world is saying enough now. And this is going to make it very much more difficult for things to go on. And it didn't help, I don't think, to have Israel do what it did in the Middle East whatsoever. But we'll see. I don't know how it could come out good. I don't see how people dying could ever be good, and for no good reason, for sure. Again, an occupier and an oppressor is taking over someone else's land. And I'm thinking Americans need to take better quick stock of what's going on and help to make drastic changes in the seats of decision where you're at, or what those decisions are. And again, we heard a little bit of how you do that, your talking points and all that. Something local has to start happening. Even, I guess, if you come together in mutual aid, an alternative is going to have to be made. These people that are running the world are wanting to see strife and death. And I don't know what drives that, I have no understanding of it. But it's there. It's a reality that's going on. The people here will pay for this. You think you're Americans, it's happening over there in Israel or Palestine or whatever you want to call it. No, no, no. This is all, look at, it's all the money around you. It's how the world works around you. It comes right back home. And the rooster comes home to roost. The chicken, I guess, has to come home to roost. I guess it'd be a rooster, wouldn't it? The people will pay for this warmongering through an economic digital gulag, as I've been reporting. This is how it has to go. In the national interest and of for security, national security, of course. That's how they're going to get this thing put in. It'll be just like Kobe Swindle, but even worse than I was telling you. And it's going to come in, it's going to cost you all this and maybe the lives of your loved ones. And I don't think you should, you can wait until wars are fabricated like COVID or kinetic wars or religious wars. The Fed or otherwise become too numerous that they overwhelm you with them. Because that's what this is also about. You become overwhelmed and you just don't know what to do and you really can't do much. At some point you're paralyzed. It's just too much to deal with. These wars like Kobe Swindle was a war, warp speed. Those wars are being slow walked. All of them at one time slowly walked upon the people as I speak. I've been talking about this for decades. A decade and a half or so. I was writing about it since the early 2000s, late 1990s. And this is what they were. This is what's been in the works to come along. Multifaceted, multidimensional war fronts, and the evidence of any alternative intention on all this. If you want to think, oh, there's another way to go. Well, they're not taking any of those. They're not considering any of them. As we move inexorably to this new ordered world, it's just being going that direction. There's no other thing, an option that's being allowed to anybody. The question I think I hear when I look at all this is whose world will it be and who is calling the shots? And depending on one's answer to that question will determine one's actions or inaction and ultimate compliance and submission. And you don't want to be a Palestinian because it's not a pretty sight. And you're out of position and you need help from the outside world. That's also not American. We're supposed to do for our own. We definitely would have the capacity. So the neocons want war. They're bringing us to war. They're taking every step. There's no alternative given. There's no peace, no ceasefire, no truce, no nothing. Just bring it to war. As we see the U.S. engaging itself more and more, under the color of this Israel conflict, U.S. THAAD, THAAD, and Patriot deployment escalates risks of Mideast war. So they understand that it does this, but they're going to continue. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin confirmed late on Saturday that the U.S. will deploy a THAAD battery and, quote, additional Patriot battalions to locations throughout the Middle East to increase force protection for U.S. forces. Now you know why they left that contingent of 900 at Al-Tanf. Al-Tanf, they're just in Syria. They're not supposed to be there, but they are. Well, they're going to put these anti-aircraft type units in those places now. Now you see the methods of the madness. This is, again, telling you it was a future plan. They had set this up years and years ago. Former U.S. Office and Secretary of Defense Secretary Policy Analyst Michael Maloof, again, sums up, quote, the United States really put itself in the middle of a mess. Not to mention the mess that we have domestically in our own economy when it's the fast approaching $34 trillion in dollars in debt. And there's no way to pay that back. So all in all, the Biden administration has handed us a real pile of it, not only to the American people, but also to the world. As I've been saying, this is a global problem. You think it's just over there or one spot? No, this is when you're dealing in the dollar, you're dealing in the United States, the biggest power, political, military power in the world, the nuclear power at that. This is a bigger problem for everyone. And there's no turning. The administrations never turn away. They talk about it, but they never actually turn away. They never really bring the peace. They never stop the ceasefire. They never stop the killing. They never stop getting the women and children out. They force them to move instead of leaving them alone is another thing. You have the right to be sitting where you should, right? No, not when you're in the face of an occupier, a conqueror. So the fact that they're being a conqueror proves they're not there peacefully. They're not going to have a peaceful option. And so, but these THAADs are missile defenses, but it's all going to be Russia's fault. As we heard Trump coming up, Russia stole super duper missile plans from the U.S. So he promotes to all the people that support him, Trump, that the Russians stole super duper missiles. Well, you know, Russia stole the super, we call them the super dupers, right? They go super fast. They stole that during the Obama administration, Trump added. They stole the plans and they built it. That's why we got to have these THAADs and all this other stuff. Well, maybe not so much. It sounds like to me the super duper stupid soundbite stumping, the super duped to me, as I've said on another broadcast, if this is the case that they stole it, why does Russia and China, even Iran now, have working systems and the U.S. can't get one to work? And Trump didn't mention Iran in the phone call, as if there's a phone call daisy chain on this relative to who would got this information, how they would have got this information. They already have the working systems, and the supposed inventor of them in these super-duper missiles doesn't have one. I don't even know why Trump does what he does, but there he is, and people eat it up. But I did say in a past broadcast, I think I entitled it Super Dupe or Duper. Yes, I think I did. And so this is out there. I did this a long while back. Here it comes. This come here to example to you this whole contrived deception, trying to get you to believe that Russia done it again. So Trump's not away from it. He's not bringing something new and clean. We already saw that he didn't, but I'm saying he comes a second time. He's not going to bring the new stuff. He's all engaged with all that system as well. So it's right in front of us to watch the deceptions. And so we go look at that. Did Russia, notwithstanding what I saw, the Russia and China already and Iran already have these. Why don't the United States? No, if you go look, Russia never stole any drawings of super duper U.S. missiles. So you do the fact check, and it just doesn't hold up. So just leave it at that. Let you get the link. You can read about it. This is the deception. This is the propaganda push. Trump's in on it. All the candidates are in on it. Just their side and whatever they can field to get someone to buy into their part. And no one sits back and says, wait a minute, we have a bigger reality here, a bigger truth, the truth here to look at. But we better pay close attention. That's why I'm not afraid to tell you, listen very carefully to what Russia says, what Putin says. They're not messing around. And they've got a problem. It's kind of like the miners. You can't be wrong once. Like anything I offer to somebody, like an attorney, it can't be wrong once, and they'll tear you up. And so this is where Russia is. So I'm, notwithstanding any propaganda, I'm looking at the truth underpinning all of this situation. And it's, so far, I think anybody who's listened to my broadcast will say it's guided me fairly well. Again, I'm not absent. I had to apply my studies, my international readings, my law studies, my working through certain situations, the contemplation of all this. So I'm not absent to just take anybody's word for it. But when I tell you that Putin's telling you the truth, but not the prop, you got to split the propaganda. When he's telling you what Russia's going to do, it's not a threat. It's a fact. And they will hold to that because they need to hold to that. That's their line in the sand. That's my question about them bringing on the globalists with China, the globalism. Do they really know or they're just agents? Because that part they're lying about. But for the war, people are dying. The leaders can't have the population go against them, so that's a different foundation of that they have to be careful against, that they disrupt. As we see, they're slow walking the United States into war as we do all these things, and we're really the puppet master here. Netanyahu, on the other hand, is dragging the U.S. into war with Iran to save his political career, says a security expert. And this has been a story that's been underneath all this whole entire time and before. We can even get here. Israeli Prime Minister is dragging the United States into a major war in order to save his own skin, says a security expert. Netanyahu is calling the shots, and the president just a few hours ago basically said that he asked for a delay in any invasion, Maalouf noted. Again, Michael Maalouf, going through this week with his suggestions, they sounded correct to me. But he can't control, basically, tell Netanyahu what to do. And that gives gives Netanyahu a lot of power to drag us into conflict, that were clearly reluctant to get involved with it. He pointed out that the new network of United States military bases across the Middle East were just as much of a potential target for Iran, Lebanon's Hezbollah, or Yemeni as and Sarala government as they were a threat to them, leaving the American personnel their hostages to fortune whose deaths could trigger a wider war. Remember I said, they're putting your loved ones there, and they're putting small numbers, and there's a whole lot of other people that are pretty angry about the interference of Israel in their people, even though they're just going to identify as Palestinians. It's just the Muslim Arab world, and the United States and Israel, well, that's the plan. They got to put the big footprint there so that they can go after nations like Iran, go out and keep the oil. That's what, again, Trump went after Syria's oil. We got still military in northern Syria. We're stealing, making war crimes, stealing in someone's natural resource. How people in the United States can, with a fair mind, an honest mind, with integrity, look at that and not respond to, well, we can't, we got to stop because we can't be criminals, and they allow it, tells us about our country and our people, or the spirit of our people. He goes on here, the quote, the game is on, and this is the, this really fulfills Netanyahu's long passion to get the U.S. engaged. Ultimately, the ultimate goal for Netanyahu is Iran, as security expert Michael Maloof said. And he says it that way. I think that the United States has the target of Iran, and they're using Israel in order to do that. It'd be easy to pump up a Netanyahu to do that on top of him being a criminal. I've heard he thinks he's a messianic figure, but that's another problem, but I don't know about all that perfectly. So we'll leave it there, but that could be underlying a lot of this claim that he's being able to control. The Israeli PM, Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, is facing calls to resign over the apparent failure of his government and security services to predict and head off the guerrilla incursion and rocket barrage by Hamas and other Palestinian groups from the besieged Gaza Strip into southern Israel. Netanyahu had a good reason to allow the situation to erupt on October 7th. And to escalate it further, as he was not in control of the more extreme members of his coalition government, while also facing criminal charges when he leaves office. Netanyahu could make this an endless war just to stay in office and to protect himself personally, Maloof argued. There's a clear evidence now that he knew and he had information and intelligence that Hamas was planning an action. He was warned, but let it happen. The Sturvy Dog. I titled last week's blogcast, Ruling Rabid Creatures, I think, didn't I? Yes, I did. And it continues. So there's a political motivation behind this criminal, Netanyahu, but I'm not necessarily certain, because of the dynamic and the players, that Hamas isn't having to move on its own, because it was targeted by not just Israel, by maybe every player in the Middle East. It had run its function. And it's an organization. It wants to live, too. And so it decided it's going to get real. They can cover itself with the Palestinian cause. And as we heard, once people didn't like Hamas because they weren't doing anything to protect Palestinians. Once they started helping to protect Palestinians, a major portion of the population started to agree that Hamas was finally helping. Well, it seems finicky, but there's a method to the madness for people when you're underneath an oppression like this. Delusion or prophetic. One, speaking to the Israel knew a bit here, like I still say that I still believe they could know and you could think that they let this happen, but they lost too much in my mind. They lost a whole command structure in one area, in one base. That was too much if it was a plan to let it happen to give them an excuse. So we might see a little bit of a blending here about this, but someone actually looked at this problem before and actually was talking about it. Was this guy delusional or prophetic? One IDF general warned a massacre would happen. Most dismissed retired IDF General Yitzhak Brix, warning earlier this year of Hamas invasion. Now Netanyahu wants his advice on how to win. And as I identified behind Woodshed, what was described as a surprise attack was due to Zionist arrogance. And so says the general when you go read this article. And so we still have this issue that it's not so straightforward that this was just a setup to get Hamas to foist this whole entire operation on the Middle East. that is what's developing, not necessarily as a plan. Israel is in a weakened position here at some level, and I think more than just a little bit. They've been sounding and talking tough, but you notice that they're really not moving tough. They're really taking a lot slower go, and they're looking at different ways to protect themselves if this thing goes off the charts. Israel's entire security apparatus has failed and relied too heavily on technology with an unhealthy dash of arrogance. But as it is typically the case, those who don't go with the flow and call out the glaring problems are dismissed as lunatics like General Brick, who saw the danger before anyone else. And so we do have an addressment here of that arrogance. It seemed to me that the Netanyahu was too arrogant, thinking that they're the supreme ones, the chosen ones, that they could handle it and this wouldn't happen. And they were shown wrong when they had a creature apparently created by them decided it wanted life. It was going to cut the apron strings and going to continue its existence and not allow that creator to kill it. Very interesting problem. Now, plans of oppressors occupying other people's lives never ceases. In this next story, Israel outlines future plans for Gaza, even though they said they're going to have nothing else to do with Gaza once they flatten the place. They're outlining plans for Gaza. The defense minister says the country will abandon all responsibility for the Palestinian enclave after a ground offensive. It was quoted in an unnamed Israeli official was quoted as saying that Israel will not be part of the solution in terms of giving Gazans work. We've disconnected the umbilical cord, he added. The official told the media outlet that all existing border crossings between Gaza and Israel will be closed. And yet they have future plans for how to run the territory there. Again, they don't speak straight. They're not straight talkers. There's deception. There's ulterior motives. And a lot of it's just to get rid of the Palestinian problem. Just get rid of them. Get them off the land. And then they leave them, leave the rest over there in Jordan. But at least now we've got our land and there's no reason for a two-state solution. There's not even a reason to have to worry about the Palestinians. And all that they said, they're not going to do anything in the enclave once they're done, is even a lie. They're perpetually being the chosen supreme warmongers here, the Zionistas. They will abandon all responsibility on all of this. The U.S. and Israel are mulling the creation of an interim administration of the Gaza that will be backed by UN and Arab governments. You never hear that the Palestinians will have a say, actually. As I said last week, you just look at everybody's involved instead of the people that are being killed. The idea would require support for regional Arab countries, which could prove difficult to secure the reports. So unrealistic, again, ISUS, does not intend to actually do anything to be helpful. It is not going to do anything but to make things worse since the 1948, if 1948 wasn't a clue. And whether by arrogance or surprise, here's evidence that Israel does not have to bomb women, children, and the elderly. The Zionists have the capability to isolate somebody, but it intends anyway to kill everybody. So it kills everyone out of a genocidal bloodlust and the intention to steal all the land from rightful inhabitants, as we see and read. The IDF and the ISA, Israeli's security authority, killed the deputy head of Hamas intelligence and directorate, who was responsible for planning the October 7th massacre, together with Yahya Sinwar. Based on the precise IDF and ISA intelligence, IDF fighter jets struck the deputy head of Hamas intelligence director, Shadid Barood, the IDF said on Telegram. So they have intelligence. Oh, now their intelligence works. So they have intelligence that precisely found some people, and they took those people. Kind of shows us that they don't have to be taking out all of Gaza. So how is this evidence that no general massacre is required? We can read further. Based on the precise IDF and ISA intelligence, IDF fighters struck the deputy head of Hamas. I have to repeat that. Precise information. are they doing that anywhere else since they started bombing? So now their intelligence is perfect, right? It can see the future, can see where everyone's at, and there's no surprises, is there? So being the case, I didn't hear anything in all these bombings, any particular officer being precisely identified, and then the area that they had destroyed, or based on the destruction of those hospitals, that these folks, in this case, used the excuse they had intelligence. They didn't for any of the hospitals. They didn't for any of the skyscrapers. They gave generic, oh, we're going to be at this Hamas hideouts type stuff. So we hear in this story that they could, apparently their intelligence is that good, their arrogance maybe allowed the attack. A plan for political advantage may have allowed the attack. But they can target people, but they're not. Now, we just have the evidence right there in that story. And just as other deceivers of the West, EU leaders accused of hypocrisy at peace summit. This is an ongoing theme for all the players that don't intend, or that, well, they say one thing and they do another. Remember, you know them when you see them. You know what they do. They know the fruits of what they do is how you know. The bloc's representatives were reportedly slammed for treating Israeli differently than to Russia. Quote, they were roundly accused of double standards and hypocrisy for condemning Russia's breaches of humanitarian law, but not Israel's, the outlet reported, citing people present at the event. So, but what else can one say in the face of such premise-laced, dismissive, chosen arrogance? This is how the world works. It's interesting that outlet would think that Russia was doing breaking humanitarian law, and not you look at Ukraine, but treat the two as the same, and then treat them again as different. It's pretty fascinating the multiple standards that are going on in the world. And as I said, all these nations, however they're formed, were all part of watching an invasion of a land of people that were overtaken and set against and killed and murdered. And they should have a two-state solution. Well, actually, what they should have had was the one state being Palestine with the Palestinians. And if Israeli Jews or Zionists wanted to live there, they could have moved in nicely, peacefully, and by law, in an orderly fashion. But they didn't. And so everything that we see, anybody who's talking about the right to defend the being peaceful and not allowing a ceasefire for humanitarian purposes, not allowing peace like the U.S. and Ukraine, I don't know, what else do you say? Then it's just evil. It's just an evil. It needs to be gone. And how we get that gone, I don't really know. But if we lose our perspective on these things, like I see so many people supporting Israel in this, not going to any foundation, none whatsoever, we're a done people. We're a done peoples all over the world. And speaking of all this hypocrisy, splurging taxation, we think Russia's out of it. No, no government escapes when you start looking at an objective basis for governments, what they do, how they operate, what they do, how vile they can be, how they can make, again, their propaganda is great. But who said that Russia is different than the U.S. with its extortions, exactions of every kind? Equal rights, if we look at United States law, 42 U.S.C. 1981, is it what economic health is based on is what we look at here in this story. Russia's economically strongest regions revealed Moscow and the resource-rich Khanty Mansi and the Yamalo-Nenets autonomous regions in the Urals have topped the rankings of the 35 strongest Russian regions in terms of economic development. And a study on data from Russia's tax service and statistics agency Rostat has found. Not like politicizing, weaponizing the dollar, production should not be taxed. Their resource-rich area is being taxed. If you thought they were any different, well, you think I'm talking about Russia, oh, it sounds like they're doing this, that, right. They don't do anything else different than any other government, but they do one step worse. They tax their production. How do I know this? Go read the mining law. You'll start to see about what the government can do and what they can't do. You go read the Enabling Act in the states, you realize that the states handed over the disposal of the land, so there was clear title to the land. That's where you get your patents, your disposal evidence of the land being disposed. It was all for use, and that production and manufacturing, which is production, should not be regulated at the point of the money, because that is the foundation of your government, your life, and then your government is a tertiary economy. But here in Russia, we see they're not so clean too. Anybody thought I was, a Russian propagandist? No. We look and we'll eventually find all the problems there as well. So they've come in and they've taxed their resource. And we're going to see another tab here in a moment where that they're already complaining about it. So the encumbrance that they put on this is an interesting article of news here for us. Taxing production also means that there's no private property. And again, why the U.S. load law, L-O-D-E, load law, in the 1866 mining law, is so important. What you can start deriving from it. It's very interesting statuses that develop through this to explain on all this and the vast distinction of the United States against Russia and the rest of the world, essentially, regarding private property, its possession, use, and enjoyment. Where do I get those? Those words are right out of that law. You get possession, exclusive possession, use, and enjoyment. And that's exclusive of even a government interference. So under a government without actual private property, the people are the host here to the government parasite. The people become the tax product, the human resource, if that livestock can continue to consume only their fair share. Now I'm getting into globalism and the sustainability stuff, right? That sounds just like sustainability. When you look at these articles and look at what they're doing, what they're promoting as a good thing, you can see when you have a foundation, a property foundation, you realize maybe it's not such a good thing. And they direct us to where in the world the foreigners are taking us down. That sounds real similar to sustainable development, SDG 17, the debt-laden, quote, shared responsibility, equal rights under A2030, for instance. You look at their declaration, it's at 3, 8, and 36. Which also correlates to this lack of property, lack of exclusive use and possession, and lack of enjoyment, essentially, even though you're not going to have property and like it, right? You'll be happy. No, you won't. This is the distinction in Russia. We have a difference in America that I think makes it different and makes it so much better, would make it better elsewhere as well. I would hope by now, me talking about, people would see that USA has been internationalized since Lincoln. On these things. You see this reflection from Russia. The people lost in that, in this experiment. I think, when you look at it, it sure seems like in the lack of response today, that Petri dish was discarded a long time ago, and the people have in large, enough part agreed to the usurpation that filled the void. Nature, boring a vacuum. When your production, your possession, your private property in America was defeated, and you didn't reassert it, they won, and that's where this goes. They can't, in law, the black and white will not support that, so you have an action back, but you have to know how to go after it. Again, I've said, when you get a patent evidence, and I have found a state statute that says that no judicial officer has jurisdiction to interfere with a patent, you've just found the limit of the government to come and take your property, or to interfere with it. They don't have that. In Russia, they tax that one. And we're reading on here in this story. It's really fascinating when this little story kind of popped up. They bring up something else, which I hadn't really thought about because I don't know anything about it in the United States, the value-added taxation. But three regions lead the rankings based on their levels of wages and the amount of value-added tax paid, according to the figures from the second quarter of 2023. So I wanted to go over quickly and read about value-added taxing. And we can read that the value-added tax on the Wikipedia, just to get a reference, Germany and France were the first countries to implement a VAT, doing so in the form of a general consumption tax during World War I. The modern variation of VAT was first implemented by France in 1954 in Ivory Coast colony. Recognizing the experiment was successful, the French introduced it in 1958. Maurice Lauré, joint director of the France Tax Authority and Direction Générale des Impôts, implemented VAT on April April 10, 1954, although German industrialist Wilhelm von Siemens proposed the concept in 1918. Initially directed at large businesses, it was extended over time to include all business sectors in France. It was most important source of state finance, accounting for nearly 50% of state revenues. A 2017 study found that adoption of VAT is strongly linked to countries with corporatist institutions. A value-added tax known in some countries as a goods and services tax, a GST, is a type of tax that is assessed incrementally. It is levied on the price of a product or service at each stage of the production, distribution, or sale to the end consumer. It is the ultimate consumer in a business that collects the pays, If the ultimate consumer in a business that collects the pays for the government VAT on its products or services, it can reclaim the tax paid. It is similar to and often compared to a sales tax. Similar is not the same here, I can tell you. But if you look at the way the tax law works in the United States, it is. All these value added along the way end up being an undeclared VAT. So I just think you're in a corporatist system just from that definition alone. But going on, VAT is an indirect tax because the person who ultimately bears the burden of the tax is not necessarily the same person as the one who pays the tax to the tax authorities. And so the consumer, your consumables. So like a consumer society, United States is all about that, isn't it? We're paying like this hidden indirect value-added tax all the time and don't realize. They can't do that actually to production or land disposed of production. That's all your evidence by all your patents. And that's the difference here for the United States. Some countries will take over all those natural resources, but the United States has a way for us to get, let's say, the gold and silver, valuable minerals, and possess the land around it. And that's what that act is supposed to do. Although the corruption has set in 1993, they removed the ability to, they removed the appropriations to receive the patent application for a land that you entered work. So that's a breach, but that's another time. I've talked about that before. Moving on, though, but Russia and their valued added tax system and taxing their consumers, which is all their people, and taxing their natural resource industry, which should be my interpretation of all this. It's like another thing you just don't do. It's like politicizing your dollar. You just don't do it. And so then we go on and we read this next story happened all in the same week. What a flat tax on production does in Russia or has done when under the Soviet, I respond Soviet here as the Soviet that we hear in sustainable development. That's what they're bringing in. Nikki Raapana would have told you that as well when she was alive. So we get the connections going back on through here. Russia oil industry protests crushing taxes. Common sense, increased levies have reportedly led to negative returns on production and domestic sales. Several industry majors responding to a request earlier this month from the head of the Energy Committee in Russia's lower house of parliament, Pavel Zavelny, to assess the tax burden and its impact on fuel prices. The increase in taxes on production and refining along with state price controls have sent retail business profits plummeting. According to the CEO of Russia's Tatneft, Neil Magomedov, he stressed that the sector is becoming unattractive for investment and development as a result. According to Sugertsnefnagaz, the tax take amounted to 110% of the final disposed price for gasoline and 102% for diesel. The company added that currently it does not leave enough money to cover the full extent of rental taxes, excise duties, and value-added tax on top, folks. This is Russia. This is what happens when you attach an extortion onto your production. It takes out your businesses. It takes out, there's no property here at all. And note, no different than the Soviet is the VAT extorting in the EU in the news, as we've seen this go right through this week. EU is a parody of the USSR, says Hungarian Prime Minister. In Soviet, USSR, Soviet, that system is what the sustainability thing is largely built from. You don't have property there. You have a lot of obligation to keep working and keep your nose to the sickle, it says, to cut that wheat. But Viktor Orban has likened the bloc's domineering tactics to his country's four decades under Soviet control. We had to dance to the tune that Moscow whistled, Orban said, of Hungary's four decades under Soviet control. Hungarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban has marked the anniversary of his country's failed 1956 uprising against the USSR by accusing the European Union of seeking a Soviet-like dominance by trying to strip Budapest of its identity. Think about the inversion here. People try to create an identity and not allowing you to identify them like what you would see and taking away your ability to identify in the cancel culture side of this. So Soviet dominance is stripped an identity. There is no distinction in the Soviet system. Just think about that as sustainability. How much different is that when you own your land and you own an exclusive of everybody else? You cannot be underneath a dominance like this. You cannot not have an identity. In fact, that's what your patent is issued under. It has an identity. It's called the land description, right? And so we can apply a basic law, organic law, to all these news articles if we want to, if the subject matter is right. And in other people's words, we can see why we wouldn't want to do those things. And he is complaining. And doesn't this new transformed, new ordered world seeking Soviet-like dominance want to strip you of your identity in favor of that global token citizenship, subject to rental taxes, excise duties, and value-added taxation, and other exactions of every kind, such as shared responsibility to the Sustainable Development Goals? Where did I get that little phrase, exactions of every kind? Right out of your U.S. law, from Lincoln's time, and then updated in 1973. That, 42 U.S.C. section 1981. Orban continued. The PM suggested the Monday speech that the Hungarians have a different view of freedom than their Western allies. Quote, for Westerners, freedom means escape. Get rid of yourself. Get rid of what you were born into. Change the nation. Change gender. Change identity. He added that for Hungarians, freedom is a, quote, life instinct, close quote, and that they're not willing to give up their identity. The thought of not being a man, a Christian, and a Hungarian is like tearing our hearts apart. So a very powerful statement here in his observation of what's coming down, like, let's say, through sustainability, through coming down what is Soviet control, communist control, these isms that are there. The Soviet sustainability is anti-mankind, I've said before, in favor of chattel human-controlled governance. Humanists. And I've identified for you in American law the NEPA, National Environmental Policy Act, where the balance is to mankind's advantage. They don't talk about humans there. And yet in the rules where the agencies are, they talk about humankind. And so there's a shift right there in the implementation. There's a distinction. And it definitely has to be made. And that's the difference in the language that works on it. So these are anti-mankind because they are humanists. They want to control the human animal. Human is animal. The origins of the word human, I think, come out of the Catholic Church in about 1490 or something like that. This is a new invented word as well for, again, control. This is foreign to every principle of the organic documents the United States are founded upon. This is why it's so dangerous what we talk about here. What's being imposed on the Palestinians is exactly what the sustainable development would eventually do to people. There's no property. You get told what to do. If you don't like it, then they penalize you or shoot you or whatever. Israel, new law coming out. The police can just shoot you if they want to. It's pretty fascinating to watch what's going on in the world. And apparently everybody likes that. So when do the people here exercise their reserve power to abolish the foreign usurpations and occupations? I'd like to know about all this. When will the thought of being transformed into a global token citizen become so repulsive, quote, the thought of not being a man, a woman, tears our hearts apart, as Orban is expressing. And enough so that we defend ourselves from and against this worldly beast that's raising its ugly head here, right in front of us. And when they come against us, we're supposed to move away, get away, find a quiet place, because what's coming on is going to probably be beyond most anything we could ever imagine. We're going to need lots of help, I suppose. And part of the best thing to do, as I said, don't be on the tracks when the train comes. As we move on, and who's coming on to those trains, who's now the new head of the globalist side of how this works, the Soviet in the world. That's not really fully definitive either, but it gives us a place to start, a big place, because it's the property part of that. But anyway, notwithstanding, there's still more to all this. The BRICS, the Chinese yuan surpasses euro, becomes second main SWIFT currency. As this thing is moving along, pretty cool how this stuff all moves and works, but it's happening. Remember, BRICS is not really separate. It's all still part of the global finance system. The bankers, right? All wars are bankers' wars, and there's many wars against you, whether that's Comey swindle, whether that's Israel, whether that's Ukraine, whether that's what we think it might be Afghanistan that now isn't, whether it's going to be in Iran, whether it's some kind of argument down the street from you that blows up into something worse, whether it's a cancel culture getting in your face and not letting you live your lifestyle. These are all wars that the bankers eventually get used in order to, well, first of all, distract you. Secondly, you've got to put your life's energy to it, so you can't help to stop any of it either. That's all part of the plan, too. But the world stage is moving, and remember, BRICS is not for the little man. BRICS is amongst nations. So we're not even speaking here about us, the people. We're speaking about what the nations, the reordered world, the transformed world is moving to. And it's moving there pretty quickly. BRICS member China is aggressively pushing its negative currency, the Chinese yuan, to compete against the United States dollar, euro, pound, and other local currencies. In a first, the Chinese yuan surpassed the euro, becoming the second main currency in SWIFT transactions. SWIFT is the West. Right? Doesn't sanction the Russian. They haven't sanctioned China, because China's yuan is going to be in that basket of currency, which is going to have the SDR, which is the medium between the nations that they'll shift around, not their currency. The currencies are just the basis of calculation. Euro's use of the international SWIFT payments is at its 3-year low, while Chinese yuan is at its 5-month high. Now, I've been saying that this isn't the multipolar future. The nations will deal in fiat currency or in an intermediary. This is the SDR, special drawing right. You've heard me talk about this. You can go read it for yourself. But the people will be the token citizens without access to the currency or even fit for cash. They will not even see it. It's going to be disappeared for that digital lifestyle. And here, that's why I keep saying the antidote to this is to the people need to go back to what the people, all peoples have used time out of mind. And that's gold and silver coin. That's understood to be the safe haven for storing wealth. Not a profiteering, just to store your wealth, just to keep it on a maintaining its purchasing power. And it's autonomy. You have to go hand-to-hand with somebody with a peaceful transaction. You have to exchange. It's an arms-length transaction. You literally have to put something in someone else's hands, and they hand you something in return. That's what has to go on. It stops. You've got to get out of this electronic stuff. And I don't know if you noticed, but this price of gold just did a big turnaround just because of this issue with Israel and the Palestinians. And people are saying the global fiat speculation is too speculative, and they're going to go ahead and start parking their money again. And so the price has gone up and just boosted above 2,000 again, just over within a week. But we're not looking at that part. We're looking at the fact that it's holding its value. And when strife, turmoil is expensive stuff. By the barrel, I've never seen a price, but I know it's expensive. But when there's turmoil, high turmoil, the price of gold also goes up. And so that's, we want to be as people there. It's not about, our value doesn't go away in this condition. It will under fiat. All these fiat currencies are talking about in the Western system, they're manipulable. But again, that's not even meant for people. What's meant for people is control. And they do that through that digital world, and they're doing that through the phones, and the control of the phones and all this, and you're seeing it become now mandatory as we move along. But moving into gold, if you start to find where you can locate it and get some, if you can't, kind of best if you find your own gold mine. Like I said, it's property, and property to whoever has one. In fact, I have to sell one, so if I'm still looking. I've got to get rid of the property I do have. Again, my life is not very in sync most of the time in my life, and so I have to do things out of sync, and this is probably the worst time to do it, but I have to do it out of necessity. So if you know anybody that wants to get into a gold mine, I guess I just made a little bit of an advertisement for a mining claim I have. You'll see it on the Blogcaster. You can get in touch with me at that email for a while. But to get gold, you have to find it, and that little claim I have, it's already been, the government has validated it, so it's there. And so, you're going to likely find that when you go prospecting during a fracture and a fault in the crust. So speaking of fractures and faults in crust, who'd have thunk, as we move over and on into some interesting little science things, which I normally don't get to. I just want to get to some today. It's just interesting stuff. Who'd have thunk stars, which we've been told are gaseous, have a crust? You ever thought about that? I certainly have for a long time. It came to my mind, those things aren't gas. I only know a couple people that think that. Maybe more in the last 10 years. But interesting little story here that we get this little information out of. Something I don't touch too much. There's so many other things that I think are important that we need to protect ourselves against than to wonder at the sky and all the wonder that it is. Mysterious fast radio bursts may come from star quakes. Put this gaseous model idea in your head and think about, how do you have a star quake in a gaseous model? Well, that's impossible. So we now know science doesn't know what it's talking about. However, while stars are often described as a ball of flaming gas, those gravitational forces make the cores of neutron stars the densest object in the universe. A star quake is a theorized event when the surface of a neutron star experiences a sudden shift, not unlike the tectonic plates that cause earthquakes on planetary bodies. I wasn't going to interject too much, and I don't really want to, but ever think about how do you have a surface on gas? Is an interesting problem for them. But anyway, keep moving here. We listen and we always read past some of these interesting anomalies. No, it's not. These things are not gas. There may be gas there, but it's not what they're made of. Not what we're talking about surfaces, and not what we're talking fractures in the material. There's something else. These stars are something else, and they really are. The mysterious and insanely powerful burst of radio waves that travel across the universe may come from star quakes, a hypothesized event where a star surface shakes, but not unlike the surface of the Earth during an earthquake. Ask again, how do you have a gaseous model that has a surface that shakes? We are understanding of it's a gaseous model. It's going to have equal pressure everywhere. Okay, let's keep going. Science is having some trouble here. They're not admitting to it, but they're having trouble. So a surface is my question here. We have a surface of a gas, really. So we're told about this surface, this gaseous model, but now they have theorized that there's a surface to it. Doesn't make any sense to me. If there's a surface, this requires condensed matter. So which is it? And my listener might want to take a gander at Pierre-Marie Robitaille on YouTube at Sky Scholar. Go through his stuff. Go through there with your science mind on. You're going to need it. You're going to have to keep up with him. He's pretty good at pulling this stuff together. But he's one of the first guys that I ever heard talks way beyond what I could ever do. But he was one of the first few people I've run across that actually talks about condensed matter. He speaks about it in lattice structures. And what's interesting about, I got another story coming here, that this lattice structure can be found on Earth. Even so, and that's how I started to kind of put this stuff together for myself. Not for anybody else, just for me. It made a lot more sense than what we're looking at in the big gaseous ball that's going up in flames. There's a whole lot more mass that has to go on there to keep this thing lit. But anyway, and it's very interesting how the lattice structure of a condensed matter hydrogen matches the carbon in its lattice structure on Earth. And they can hold the same rare materials. And I'll have a little link here. Let me tie that together. If science is this wrong about the gaseous model, that suns are simply gaseous, or is trying to straddle the solar fence to cover its shade side, What else does it have wrong, folks? As we keep going through these things, I don't talk about a lot of these anomalies much. Like I said, killers in the world, the psychopaths, are much more dangerous to deal with than being awed by the sun and it goes around the moon and the earth and history and all that stuff. I mean, that's there. I guess you could study it. Maybe a good escape, but you don't want to keep yourself vulnerable where it's not necessary. Speaking of surface now, low water levels in Lake Powell unearthed fossils. Extinct Jurassic mammal. Low water levels in Lake Powell have unveiled a treasure trove of extremely rare fossils belonging to a long extinct mammal relative that inhabited the North America 180 million years ago. Officials collected hundreds of pounds of rocks encasing bones and skeletons, which will be meticulously scanned and analyzed before joining the collections of the Prehistoric Museum in Price, Utah. Researchers had a mere 120 days to retrieve the fossils before water levels returned in their regular state. And so this so-called drought and things, the weather, climate change, global warming, it's going to enter and come back and be fill this place in, but it dried it up and we get to see some history. But where was it? These fossils, them bones, I guess they got a couple gallons of petroleum out of them too, remember? I mean, fossil fuel. Them bones were on the surface. How long ago did these things really live on the surface, to be only on the surface? It's always been a question to me. Yeah, I got the understanding that they could be covered and uncovered and all this. But really, we don't even know that much. But how long ago did they live? Did they 180 million years ago? Maybe our time scale is all screwed up too. Maybe science has kind of given us a deception on that. I'm just talking in questions. I don't know. I think it's fascinating. These rare fossils on the surface, how did they not get washed away or worn away by the cyclical environmental elements? Is another question I have. I guess somebody could say they had the answer, but no different than a gas. A sun is not gas. I wonder how right they would be. But getting into another very interesting and very deep subject, hitting the surface of something can get real deep. That's what we're going to do. Go from the surface of the earth down in the middle. Deep earth leaks ultra-rare helium isotopes, study suggests. Well, the suggestion, maybe where it's leaking may be a suggestion, but I'll tell you, it does. And we got some evidence that's also on the surface. But the origins of helium, we always had in school. We got hydrogen, helium, lithium, sodium. There's all kinds of different isotopes of these elements. It's almost like looking at alchemy and transmutation, energy level. It's so much more fascinating than what they told us in school. And I kind of went along that line as I noticed that my suggestions were being dismissed, but I can still see truths in reality. And my mind didn't want to get locked into some of this. Maybe not so learned, but it was observant. And maybe not so observant, more than I see some stuff, and it just was interesting. And that's how science really seems to start. The origins of helium in the universe date back to the Big Bang, they say here. I'm not so sure, but we'll read. Which took place 13.8 billion years ago. Well, if they have fossils wrong, well, I don't know how much about this. Here, keep going. Lots of questions. Science is wonderful that way. You ask all kinds of questions. And it doesn't kill you. But not like in Palestinians and Israel. But some of this rare isotope was swallowed by the Earth as it formed, while more was thrown outward in the process. Our planet's core might be leaking the ultra-rare isotope helium-3, which indicates a higher level of activity deep inside the Earth than expected. Uh-oh, surprise. They didn't know it could do that. Scientists, big surprise. They expect too much, I think. But here, remember, I've explained to you as it was explained to me, because I asked one of the only guys on the Earth, literally, he's in touch with a lot of scientists, and they don't quite get this either. What this guy knows, how he found it out was pretty fascinating. And he hasn't told me all his secrets. And in fact, he hasn't told me any of his secrets. I've had to apply what I know to what he tells me. And I work out what the real thing is. But I have a guy who tells me, after running across a rock, well, I was prospecting, as I found out it looked like what he had described, there are places on the Earth, not deep, but on the Earth, very near the surface or on the surface, that contain helium-3, the isotope. And it's locked into the ancient seabed so far. Neat stuff, huh? Very few places on the Earth you can find this. And so this is, whether it's a suggestion of how it originates, that doesn't matter. It is findable on the Earth. It's something in the world. It's something in the universe. And this helium-3 is fascinating stuff. It's scary how much energy is wrapped up in helium-3. And not many people, if anybody, outside of government, know how to deal with it. Think about that. Think how big a deal this would be if they could find out that was the case. You know, I think our energy concerns, well, green energy would go away. We would just have all the energy we needed with this stuff. It's fascinating. But they're moving on into maybe more man-made stuff. Well, we have to use it anyway, don't we? That's our quest in dominating the world and finding out about it. The wonder of the creation. One ancient place, so we keep on getting this old stuff now. One ancient place near the surface that is being explored has developed what appears to be a man-made problem, folks. So we're just dirty creatures as we go around, and we kind of mess things up if we're not paying attention. They were so worried about it for a while with the moon and not bringing up contamination from the Earth and put it on the moon, or coming from the space or the moon and bringing it back, like some of these rocks and asteroids they're bringing back. Nobody knows what's really in them, and if we don't have the technology to see what is in them, if there is something there, we won't know it, maybe until it's too late. But to hear, catastrophic arrival. Bird flu strikes Antarctic for the first time, threatening unique wildlife. Remember about the bird flu. Remember way back when I was reporting on this. It's not a lot different than Kobe swimmer, but it's serious because it does apparently kill. And there's not much protection. I think this may be the evidence here of a feared zoonotic transfer, this catastrophe. The bird flu is striking in Arctic, but it's not an animal transfer, at least not animal to man, but man to animal. Let me remind you about that avian flu, so-called. It was novel, too. Remember, novel is patented, man-made product. We talked all about this then. I named it the pig's fly flu way back when because it wouldn't be a natural pathogen until pigs fly. You remember my broadcast back then about this. So, it's a good thing that they're now, at least, and this report says, they're telling us that, quote, field work involving animal handling has been temporarily suspended and the stringent precautions are being taken to prevent further transmission. In this regard, the likely inoculated researchers passed the synthetic protein to the animals and made them sick. Those damn dirty apes. Yes, we did. And so where's Greta when you really need her, folks? I mean, gee, man. So we might have a setting up a man-made catastrophe down there in Antarctica just by looking at it and carrying our own, our supposed inoculations with us that interfere with the animal population. And it would be a sad thing because it's reported in the article, it's really wiping stuff out quite a bit. It can change whole ecosystems literally over one season, moving on and mitigating other man-made cataclysm, such as the one Michael Mann made up. Remember him, the hockey stick dude. Developing countries poised to abandon climate reparations fund. Again, all these do-gooders out here, all these liars and deceivers out, working what they can work. Member nations have rejected a proposal by the United States and the EU to establish the fund within the World Bank. So here, everything's centralized to the bankers, but here the member nations are rejecting a proposal. The beneficiaries of the proposed Global Climate Reparations Fund have shot down a U.S. and EU-backed plan to host it within the World Bank, threatening to abandon negotiations entirely ahead of next month's COP28 climate summit if Washington doesn't budge. Folks, anyone see a problem with that? Yeah, I don't. It'll be good. Abandon that. Top 21. Top out, 28. Just get rid of it. Moving on here. Man-made global warming. Michael Mann made up. Remember all that. Just kind of go. Nobody thinks about that. It's made up stuff. From one type of censorship to another now, the Supreme Court announces it will take up the big tech censorship case. Senator Eric Schmidt, Republican of Missouri, the Louisiana Attorney General and Governor-elect Jeff Landry, Republican of Louisiana, filed the lawsuit. The United States Supreme Court has granted certiorari in Missouri versus Biden. The nation's highest court will hear the most important free speech case in American history. This grants us the opportunity. We get the opportunity to affirm once and for all that the government is not permitted to use the government speech doctrine to muffle the expression of disfavored viewpoints. We look forward to making our arguments soon, Landry posted. An argument, folks. Your rights are an argument. Anyway, good thing that they're going to have this. See if government censorship can overrule your freedom of expression outside of the six or seven things you're not supposed to do as we move on. And these free speech things are coming to bear now as people had to go fight for them. These aren't free speech. You have to go fight for them to keep all of these things. Why I've been telling you, if you want to have a right, you think you have, you better go make it a law so that the current corporatists have to follow it universally and generally the same. California anti-misinformation law collapses thanks to the First Amendment. So if these things go to court, they will be turned down, but you have to argue over them. It's my main problem. It always has been. The Golden State has succumbed to mounting lawsuits and repealed a hotly debated law that sought to muzzle physicians offering COVID advice that contradicted mainstream medical perceptions. Legal action saw the bill initially enacted in September of 2022. It implemented in January and brought to an abrupt halt. You can read more about that. Free speech is winning here on these issues, even in the Covey swindle, as I told you they would if you bring the right argument. Again, arguing for your rights doesn't seem like a right. But at any rate, that's what we set up and we allow as people. Doctor persecuted for misinformation wins appeal. We have another story along the same lines of COVID misinformation, so-called. Dr. Eggleston gets the right of appeal. Keep fighting and arguing over something that you would think would have been presumed. And nobody's bringing the argument that all these doctors had the right to say what they were going to say, absent the showing by the local official pursuant to the health department, the health code, relative to the determination of an infectious agent that anybody was a carrier of it, and then the treatment that did stop it, not extended it, caused any sudden death, none of that stuff, stops the pathogen. Not the synthetic oil helped lift it. No. These doctors will probably come and prevail. The First Amendment allows that. But you have to fight. You have to argue. And this is a problem in my mind. We have to maybe change that. A natural evolution, indisputable evidence for a deliberate and systematic creation of circulating COVID variants. On August 5th, 2023, a Japanese research team published a preprint appears to contain the most important and shocking revelation of the COVID era. Tanaka and Mizuwa from Osaka Medical University and Kyoto University wanted to trace the historic evolution of the Omicron variant of SARS-CoV-2 by studying viral sequences found in the wild and deposited in the database. They said they did a reverse genetics, and they didn't find that it could be done naturally by the way this was going on. And so, anyway, you can read more. I'm running here out of time. Again, it wasn't what they said it was, and I told you that right going in because it was novel. It was invented synthetic proteins. U.S. judge declares California's assault weapons ban unconstitutional. So again, we have to fight for our rights if we want to keep going. The federal judge on Thursday declared the California law banning assault weapons unconstitutional, saying the prohibition enacted in 1989, how long this has been going on, injustice from day one against semi-automatic weapons, could not stand under U.S. Supreme Court ruling that last year that expanded gun rights. All it did is it says you got to conform your local laws now to what happened historically, and all these laws can't. It takes you to go fight to do that. That's where I think I'll leave it right there. I hope today gave you some head turning, and you start looking around, start rethinking your world, start using your mind again, get that exercise, and then get into action to defend the things you find important. They want us going to war. We could become a voice all against it. They did it. They've done it quite a few times in my history on this planet. And it does affect them. They don't like to be called out. And it becomes noisy. You have to become noisy, but in the proper ways. Maybe do your little list of talking points, they call it, and then advocate those strenuously with a lot of other people. And do it respectfully, and do it truthfully, and do it with foundation. I'll be with you next week. Tech Tips for Nature World.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.